The Federal Defense of Marriage Act struck down. What's ahead in the Indiana debate over same-sex marriage? Mike Pence eliminates comments from his Facebook page. The tweet from Connie Lawson that caused Democrats to squawk. And Joe Donnelly votes for the immigration bill. That plus Larry Bird and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending June 28, 2013.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
AT&T, connecting Hoosiers with the world for more than 130 years. Investing to build communication networks to help Indiana businesses and consumers succeed in a global economy. AT&T, rethink possible.
This week, the U.S. Supreme Court struck down the Federal Defense of Marriage Act, leading supporters of same-sex marriage to celebrate at the Indiana State House. And that's where the debate over same-sex marriage will now start again. Republican leaders want to write Indiana's ban on same-sex marriage into the state constitution. For that to happen, voters would have to approve it. Groups on both sides are energized. Here is same-sex opponent Kurt Smith, followed by Chris Paulson of Indiana Equality Action.
We're ready for a fight. We've been itching for a fight for a long time. We would hope to have this done a lot sooner, but bring it on.
The fight's not over here in Indiana, and it's going to be a large fight, and we have to come together as a community and with our straight allies and push for our rights here in Indiana.
Did legislative leaders do the right thing by waiting for this Supreme Court ruling? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanes, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Mike McDaniel, does this create new urgency for the people who oppose same-sex marriage?
Well, I think they've, as Kurt Smith was saying a minute ago, I think they've been preparing for this for a long time. And the decision clearly says that the states can still decide their own fate when it comes to this issue.
Well, so, in effect, it throws it to the states, right?
It does. And so I look for this to be voted upon in the next session of the legislature. It will come up. It will get a vote. Now, in 2011, this passed the House with 70 votes and passed the Senate with 40 votes. And so there would have to be a whole lot of changing going on for this not to happen in the next session of the General Assembly. And so I look for it to pass. I look for it to be on the ballot in 2014. I think this is going to be one of the most interesting political debates that we've had in the state for a long time. But the people will decide this question.
Especially because of the changing attitudes. I mean, Brian Bosma and David Long decided earlier this year that they didn't want to deal with this year because they wanted to see what the Supreme Court did. And now they're both saying we need to go ahead with this.
They didn't want to deal with it this year. They don't want to deal with it next year if they have any common sense. Indiana law already prohibits gay marriage.
There's a statute.
There's a statute, and it's in effect, and there's no need for a constitutional amendment. Now, you know, we can have a debate on whether or not we ought to permit gay marriage in Indiana, and we'll have that someday. But the idea that this legislature would put into the Constitution so that as attitudes change, the law cannot change, is offensive. It really is offensive. And it is also going to mobilize people. When you have all the large employers in Indiana saying that this sends a terrible message to just the kind of young people that they want to recruit to work here in Indiana, and here we go out marching to solve a problem that doesn't exist here. So, yeah, it ought to fail, and the language on it also is bad, besides everything else.
The governor also said that this should be taken up. Now, it doesn't come to him to sign. There's no reason why he needed to speak up on this.
Well, he sees it as an important issue from his perspective, and it's consistent with his view all along. So I would have been surprised, actually, if he had not said something about this. But I think it's interesting. I think the legislature, by delaying and waiting on the courts, made it more difficult for itself next year, because the attitudes have changed so much and continue to change in favor of same-sex marriage that the people who are opposing this are going to have a hard time. Votes will change in the legislature next year. I believe with Mike that it will pass. But votes will change, and I think when it goes to the ballot, the Democrats have started to use the right argument, and it's the argument that Ann just enunciated. It's an economic question as much as it is anything else. It's a rights question at its fundamental basis, and I think that that's going to be persuasive when it goes to the poll, and I think it will get beat.
Well, as Ann pointed out, the ban that will be considered also bans civil unions. Now,
in the indicia of that, whatever that means, can you imagine how much litigation there will be on what that is?
Well, you can be sure that opponents will try to change the wording, which would start the process over and add 2 or 3 years to the process. I'm wondering, are there some lukewarm supporters of the ban who would vote for the amendment to change it and start the process over to avoid going on the board?
I think that's possible, because I do think that there, just as there has been a dramatic shift in public opinion in the public at large, I would not be surprised to see shifts within membership of the General Assembly, and not necessarily on moral grounds. I think those are not the opinions where there's a lot of flex point. I think the change comes, and I'll repeat what has been said, on the economic policy. You have Republicans probably who maybe are lukewarm, who say, you know, when I got Eli Lilly and Cummins Engine and others coming down here, WellPoint telling us that jobs are going to go elsewhere, that brain drain will be exacerbated in Indiana if we go with this approach, that gives them cover. And also, as suggested a moment ago by Ann, that this is a recipe for years of litigation with that sort of read into it what you want language, the second portion of the proposed amendment, that I think some will say fiscal prudence suggests that we don't incur what would be, I don't know, millions of dollars of litigation, time is all is said and done. So I think there is some political cover for those who, as you describe, as are lukewarm.
There's going to be litigation elsewhere, too, that's going to try to figure out what this means. If some states can have same-sex marriage, what happens then if a couple moves to another state,
right,
like, for example, Indiana, where I understand there's been a divorce filed in a same-sex marriage here in Marion County here this week.
The Supreme Court left a lot of questions unanswered with this. And the language there that you can prevent same-sex marriage, but you can't target a certain group for scorn or whatever the word was. I'm saying to myself, what does that mean? What are they trying to say? And I think the answer is they're not entirely sure what they're trying to say. They just thought the federal government getting in that was ill-advised. But that opens the door to a lot of other questions, because it's now 13 states and growing who permit this.
And, you know, this whole thing is, I think, an academic exercise. I mean, I'm not suggesting, for those who live the lifestyle and want the rights, it's not an academic exercise, but that this will be resolved in favor of those proponents of same-sex marriage nationally within the next generation. It's even
except
if,
in Indiana.
You know, even if, I think, even if Indiana passed the constitutional
amendment. Generation's a long time.
Because, right, it is. But, I mean, if you look at the age breakdown on public opinion in Indiana and elsewhere, there is no way that the folks who are kids today
attitudes are changing.
Would tolerate a ban. That's my thinking anyway.
Well, Governor Mike Pence issued a statement expressing disappointment over the Supreme Court ruling. He posted that statement on his Facebook page, and it provoked over 1,000 responses. Some of those responses were deemed by his staff to be uncivil. They were removed. Pence said Thursday that his social media policy allows for differing opinions without personal attacks. However, screenshots provided by one of the commenters show one statement with no clear personal attack was deleted, and another asking what economic impact Pence's stance would have on the state was also deleted. Now, the governor has today put another statement up apologizing, but there's another website up called Pencership.com where they've got the deleted comments.
Right.
This is kind of a quagmire for the governor.
This is greasy kid stuff. I mean, you know, he's been in that Tea Party echo chamber so long that he cannot possibly stand anybody taking a position that's contrary to him. And he takes it as a personal affront, whether it is or it isn't. The problem he has is, how does this jive with the Freedom of Information Act? I mean, this is a government website, okay? And he's deleting the reference and preventing people from going on it. I mean, you could do the same thing with a written letter into the governor's office. That's not a violation, you First Amendment guys?
I'm not sure. It may be. One of the things he's learned, though, is that you can't delete it and make it go away. Somebody out there is capturing it and posting it somewhere else.
Mike Pence has a history of defending people's right to say anything they want to say.
Except on his website.
But what's interesting about this to me, about this and what we're going to talk about here soon in another situation, still these political leaders at every step are learning to use social media today. And you don't know what you can and cannot do yet, and they're still learning how to do that. If you've got some staff person who thinks they're protecting you and deleting stuff that they think might be offensive or might be opposed to what makes your particular office holder looks good, I mean, you know, they're learning now that you can't do that stuff. Right. But this is all new. This is all new.
So you're saying the governor made a mistake.
I think the staff member clearly made a mistake about how far they went with it. Now, as far as offensive language and that kind of stuff,
that's an easy call
to make. But when what's offensive in the eye isn't the eye of the beholder. I mean, if somebody says something and is calling them a name, even though they might not use a word that's vulgar to some people, that could be looked at as offensive.
Oh, sure,
too.
But clearly there were. But he even admitted in his apology that there were comments that were simply in opposition to his that were.
To
removed.
Me, that's what's interesting about this, because they're all learning as we go here what you can and cannot do with this information that's kind of floating around in public domain. I mean, people make jokes about what's on Facebook,
sure.
and on Twitter, about the factualness of it, and all those kinds of things. But now we're finding out that maybe because it is public domain that you can't mess around with that stuff, and it's all new field, and I think the governor's track record speaks for itself on this question. It's no big deal.
So does he deserve a pass?
No, I wouldn't necessarily give him a pass. I think I'll be the First Amendment absolutist, although I don't think necessarily this is an odd area of the law, and it's evolving. And it would be an interesting argument whether this open records law applies, because I think the courts have found, not in this case, of course, but generally, that you don't own your Facebook content. I believe
right.
Facebook owns the content. So that may be a wrinkle that sullies the argument you're making. Although
it's a government employee on government time who's doing it right.
No matter how slice it.
That's not what this is.
I'm just talking about the legal nuance. Yeah. But nobody should be deleting anything.
And there's no written references to what they will or will. There's no written policy.
There will be, though, apparently in the future.
But
in the meantime, whoever the staffer was who's charged with monitoring these things, you would think would be savvy enough to realize nothing ever gets deleted from the internet. And that's why you have these other sites where this will be blown up, and the people will have a megaphone now that they wouldn't have had before, because now we're talking about
it. It's going viral. In the first 12 hours of Pencership.com, they got 5,000 unique visitors.
Because the other unique thing of this is the people who they censored have been barred from going back to that website.
Yeah, this has been bungled badly by the administration from top to bottom. First of all, Facebook has been around for a long time.
Yeah.
It is an evolving technology, and I do acknowledge that when you have a third party handling this, they can make mistakes. But this comes back to the governor. He attempted to take care of it with a very sincere apology, which I was impressed with.
Yeah.
But as censorship has shown, they're still deleting posts that have really no... After the apology, that really have, and you know, we can talk about what's vulgar about, but these were just posts that questioned the governor's position.
And you know why it's...
And they're still doing it.
And that's why it's going to be a nightmare for the administration, because now, whether on this issue or anything else, it's always going to be a test to see, you know, what we can get on the website. So now this has escalated. Exactly. It's the old adage about the cover-up is worse than the crime. Don't ever try to delete. Don't ever try to obscure.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question is, did Mike Pence handle his Facebook page in responsible fashion? Your choices are A, yes, B, no, and C, maybe he should stick to Twitter. Last week's question was, should the Republicans pick a woman to be state chairman? 20% said yes, 15% said no, 65% said it shouldn't matter. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Sticking with social media and politics, Secretary of State Connie Lawson has established tighter security on her Twitter account. A member of Lawson's staff tweeted a political message on her official account last week. That's a potential ethics violation because government employees are prohibited from doing political work while on duty. The staff member in question has been identified and is being punished, according to a spokeswoman. Indiana Democrats, meantime, are blaming Lawson. State Chairman John Zodi.
I see it as a problem because this is an example of our chief elections officer in the state of Indiana, the right hand not knowing what the left hand's doing, and vice versa. And that doesn't speak well for our elections process here in the state.
John Kitzenberger, are the Democrats overplaying that?
You know, I think they're edging up very close to it. It was a mistake, clearly, and a potential violation. The person has been called out and is apparently being punished. And this is different from the Facebook situation because, you know, clearly there are laws that are in effect here. And so you have a policy to deal with that. And I think that that's come and gone. And actually, this one will go away probably because of the governor's recent fall to all. And the Democrats have a much, much richer target at which to aim.
Yeah, and there was and is a notation at the top of Connie Lawson's page that says that staffers author some of the tweets, and that any tweet authored by her has her initials at the end, so it's clear that she didn't do this. She get a pass?
No, I don't want to give anybody passes when it comes to these sorts of issues. What it reminds me is that apparently we have a generation of state officials and staff members who don't understand why these laws were put in place and why these regulations about ghost employment and not politicking on state time. I mean, you go at the federal level, you know, you have members of the House and Senate who cross the street to use a different phone to place a fundraising call. I don't know if that's passe now or they're still sticklers.
They have two different cell phones.
Right. And I know in this era when everybody is, you know, accessible 24/7 and you have your tablets and your smartphones, it's probably easy to blur the lines because you're always on the clock or never on the clock, depending on, I guess, your frame of reference. Maybe it's time for a tutorial on for state officials as part of the orientation process on why those laws and why those regulations were put in place to begin with.
Well, the Democrats, I think you will see, will, between now and November of 2014, do everything they can to suggest that there are ethical problems in the Secretary of State's office because they want to do anything they can to bring up Charlie White's name while Connie Lawson is running. Nevertheless, she needed to do a better job of training the staff, right?
This is a stretch, and when I say stretch, this is a Gumby stretch. This tweet was made by a staff person who was trying to drive somebody to the newly established political
get
account.
Get them off the government
out of the
account.
Government account.
Right.
And you know, but they'd understand that they can't do that even though they were trying to do what they thought was the right thing. You know, you can't do that. And what she's done is she said, now, nobody in my office except myself and the communication director can post this stuff unless you clear it through us. I mean, she acted on it immediately. But as far as the Democrats are concerned, Zodi and company, I mean, this is exactly what you described. I mean, this is an act of desperation, trying to do everything you can between now and the election to try to make her look bad because they want to try to beat her in the next campaign. And, you know, Connie Lawson, when she was appointed to this job, everybody, including everybody in this panel, talked about how she was a perfect person for that appointment because she was above approach integrity-wise, and that continues to be the case. And this thing will be, you know, much ado about nothing in a hurry.
I don't think the Twitter thing by itself is a big deal, okay? I don't. But I do think that the climate of politics in that office is a different story. I was in favor of her appointment in the beginning.
Yeah, you
because
you
I thought, just a second, because I thought that she was going to approach that job in a bipartisan fashion. She is not. She has done everything she can to restrict voting access for
that
Democrats.
Is not true.
That is true.
No,
and I
not.
Expected more of her, and I think that this is part of that climate of politicizing the Secretary of State's office.
Let's not be too quick to poo-poo this thing and say it's Gumby stretchable, because legally I would think this is more problematic than the Penn stuff. The Penn stuff is a violation of political savvy, maybe, and
maybe
public perception. This is... How is it not ghost employment under Indiana statute? If you have a state employee doing political. Well, I mean, if nobody's going to prosecute the individual, but I mean, it is. It is by the definition of the law.
One message of less than 140 characters is tough.
But, you know, but that's a real stretch.
I think it's worth talking about. I think we've talked about it.
Let's move on.
What I would say. Good call. An immigration bill passed by the U.S. Senate is now going to the House. The Senate bill passed with bipartisan support, including a yes vote from Indiana Democrat Joe Donnelly, now goes to the House, where GOP Senator Dan Coats wants to see big changes. Speaker of the House John Boehner says he will not bring up the Senate bill for a vote. He says House Republicans will create their own immigration reform plan.
We're going to go home for the recess next week and listen to our constituents. And when we get back, we're going to have a conference on July the 10th to have a discussion about the way forward.
We know who's in the majority, but if you want our votes, it has to be something that our members can vote for.
Nancy Pelosi there. John Schwanis, does Joe Donnelly's vote come as a surprise?
I don't think so. Now, granted, he got a lot of pressure from opponents of a path to citizenship, but he also got a lot of pressure from supporters who think that is the way to go. Not just special interest groups, but even there was a piece, the Washington Post, just today about big donors in the Republican Party, are pushing the Republican Party to move this direction. So, and there were 14 Republican senators who voted for it. So Joe Donnelly is not, I don't think, sticking his neck too far out, although his opponents certainly will try to make hay of it. But it, for the reasons that I just mentioned, I don't see it as much of a surprise.
But based on what he did when he was in the House and an ad he ran in his 2010 campaign, it's a change in position.
It is a change in position, and I think it's one that can be rationally explained and will have to be rationally explained the next time he faces the voters. And we'll see how it goes. I mean, if the thing passes, or depending on what happens with the House and there's a reconciliation, it may or may not have an effect on the election. I mean, it's so far down the road now. It is a change in position. He'll be able to make his case. I don't think it'll be a big issue the next time around.
Well, I think the 14 Republicans voting yes may help him, but you know, and that someday he's going to be accused of running as a Republican, and then acting as like a Democrat when
he
got there, right?
And how long did they accuse Evan Bayh of that, and how much harm did it do him? Okay, I mean, it's nonsense. Joe Donnelly is going to do what he thinks is best with any piece of legislation. He studied this. It's the right thing to do. Everybody who is responsible in government is calling for immigration reform. And on the radical
including Dan Coats.
Yeah, but they're putting up the shibboleth about the national security. I mean, we have people from Mexico coming over carrying babies. They're not carrying submachine guns. It's not the Taliban coming in there. And they have an extensive security provision in this bill already. So it is an excuse for Coates to vote against it, not a reason for him to vote against it.
Probably aren't going to be any Republicans in the Indiana House delegation who are going to go for immigration reform.
I don't know. I don't know what the final bill is going to look like. And there are going to be changes to this bill, obviously, when it gets to the House. But as far as Coates' vote's concerned, you know, Coates' vote against this bill was based on the fact that the Obama administration promised that they were going to close down the borders and didn't. And whether or not they're coming across with babies or guns, they're still coming across illegally.
Actually,
and it still puts a pressure on the entire system. And so his vote against this bill was based on the fact that he's heard this before, that they're going to do it. All he said was, I want some proof that they're actually closing down the border and this is working. And there is no proof in this bill to that effect, and that's why he voted against it. So you're going to see a lot of changes in this when it gets to the House, and we'll see what the final outcome comes out.
We've had a net negative migration down to the southern border. There's still many people here, but we've also had a net. The problem is going down, not going up. And on top of that, you know, when you talk about change in position, if I recall correctly, Senator Coates voted in favor of an immigration bill in the mid-1980s, and now he's switched his vote.
He voted for an assault weapons ban when he was first there,
too. I mean, we can have situational votes
here. You don't know what the bill was then.
Well, it was on immigration.
For June, this was a big week for basketball news, and one of the biggest stories is the return of Larry Bird to be president of the Indiana Pacers.
I got an opportunity to go back home. I love Indianapolis. We got a great team. I know the system. I know what we need here to fill our dreams, and it's really an easy choice.
So, Ann Delaney, what was the bigger story this week, Larry Bird or Victor Oladipo and Cody Zeller going number 2 and 4 in the NBA draft?
Look. Well, I'm glad to welcome Larry Bird back. But when was the last time a Big Ten team had two of the top 5 picks in the NBA draft? The bigger story is Cody Zeller and Victor Oladipo.
You agree?
Oh, absolutely.
Running for IG trustee.
No, I think that was she is. And you still have some time to vote for her. But did we get that commercial in? I want my money. But now, that's a huge story.
You know, they have these two great players, and they were a great team, but they couldn't get out of the Sweet 16.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Ice Miller. Proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
AT&T, connecting Hoosiers with the world for more than 130 years. Investing to build communication networks to help Indiana businesses and consumers succeed in a global economy. AT&T, rethink possible.